Yeah.
About the overpopulation, do you think that possibly new advancements in technology like genetic engineering and possibly space colonization will help to offset the population increase?
Well, the question is whether, among other things, space colonization could relieve the population problem. And I think that is both impossible and wrong. I'm not putting you down as an individual person. We're just discussing the idea that you've raised.
If man is the problem, he isn't the answer.
Well, that's well said. If man is the problem, he isn't the answer. So what would we do if we went and colonized Mars or whatever at huge cost and took our same value system and then overpopulated Mars? So we've got to get our act together here on Earth. But actually, I think it's completely unrealistic to think of space colonization. The amounts of energy we're expending now on various space things is a crime, and it's an obscene crime. A lot can be done by way of exploring outer space, as it's called, by robotic means. You don't have to send a man to Mars. That's just some sort of a Texas idea. Unitarian.
From Texas.
From Texas. I'm glad you're smiling.
On how we change, this is trying to get to practical stuff. This has reminded me of an experience that raises a question. 15 years or more ago, I had a very long interchange with a 55-year-old man who was a Bible scholar at a fundamentalist college, raised fundamentalist, and around age 40, that worldview fell apart. And we had a long talk about how that happened and how it doesn't. And he said liberals have no idea what's going on. It isn't logic. You don't argue someone out of a worldview. He said it's a perfect eggshell, and a crack anywhere will destroy it. And I said, what crack destroyed it for you? And he said, the publication of the Pentagon Papers. He said, Paul said the government can be trusted, and the Pentagon Papers showed they lied. So my question for here is, I wonder what really good, useful, likely cracks there can be to help shatter the worldview that, you know, no one is evil, the government can be trusted. Because I don't think it is a logical.
The next natural disaster.
The next event. That's not true. That'll work the opposite way, because if they have the next event will be another 911 to get whatever they want, okay? Or those concentration camps that Halliburton is building right now. And I'm not going peaceably.
It's interesting. Now, when you raise your question, sorry, your first name is?
Davidson.
Your first name?
Yeah. Davidson. We couldn't afford first names.
I have a good friend, Elias Davidson, Davidson, in Iceland. He lives in Reykjavik. But his name used to be some other name, a Jewish name that I forget. And when he moved there in 1962, Iceland law said that every immigrant had to adopt an Icelandic name. So he chose Davidson because his first name was Davidson. It was David. So I'll remember you. So just say something in response to that? Several people were answering your question. And I think that indicates that there's no one answer to it. So a crack in the eggshell for one person might even be something about 9/11, and a crack in the eggshell for another person would be when they put in a long, loyal service to a company and they get tossed aside like a piece of rubble. And for other people, it'll be that their kids can't get a proper job even after they're properly educated. There'd be more and more of these cracks.
There's a corollary, you get Larry, too. Pardon? Sometimes it radicalizes people.
Yeah.
Like, my dad recently lost his job, and he's become more conservative.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Now, and that reminds me of something else I did want to share about how we think, you know, that the last part of my three parts. And that is that recent research, and it's quite solid. I can't tell you the research institute. But anyway, this came out of California. It was reported in quite a number of newspapers and obviously in journals, was studying how people respond. There's so many ways now to measure brain activity. It's extremely exciting. You can measure brain activity by blood flow, by temperature, by electrical activity, by pressure, all sorts of ways. They have what are those tests you take? Not a CAT scan.
Electroencephalograph.
MRI. And then there's MRI small f, which is a super one. And so there are all these ways of measuring brain activity. Now, the people who reported at this conference just in January of this year in California said that when it's even worse than we think, that the left brain is protecting whatever story the right brain believes. It's even worse than that. Because what they found is that when people rejected evidence they did not like, the pleasure centers of the brain lit up. We actually enjoy being perverse and saying, I don't believe that. We actually enjoy it. Now, the thing is that if in Rita Carter's book, Mapping the Mind, she goes back to why would this be? Well, in early societies, and as the societies became more complex, it was important that people hung together in the tribe. You know, you wanted some unanimity in the tribe. You couldn't be sort of squabbling among yourselves because then another tribe might come and wipe you out while you're involved in this. So you had to have a unified thought in the tribe. So, of course, it requires a leader. Isn't it handy? There's always a leader just right there to help. And so, whereas information should be the leader. But anyway, so she said that it became evolutionarily wise for the tribe to impose unanimity of thought on the tribe. It was essentially a survival mechanism. And she said, from the hunting party to the political party. But of course, now it's not a survival mechanism anywhere at all nowadays for everybody to think alike. It's the opposite. That's why we have to evolve or die. We have to reinvent ourselves. The evolution now has to be cultural and political.
Do you know what? Economic.
And well, yeah, and we could add a few more dimensions. That lady there and then Ralph.
Yes, when that day happened, the tragedy of that day happened, my first thought was America is starting to feel the effects of what they've been doing all over the world for the last 50, 60 years. And people that I met and came in contact with shortly after that, there were good responses and there were very negative responses. But what I had to reflect on for myself was that we're in a situation now as people, not just in America, but the world over, because you hear the slogan, God bless America, and I heard someone say it should be God bless humanity, is that we have to understand that we are at a point where there's this balance of good and evil. And what is happening with this conference and more people opening up their minds to the reality, what happened is that... is that the good is going to outweigh it, and that what we do here is... the payment that we get for what we do here is people starting to realize that there has been an effect or an action put on people to sort of like control them so that there can be this new change or this new power, this new world order that will make, you know, those in charge of everything, and the rest of us just follow.
Good.
Too well said. Ralph.
Barry, this has been an interesting discussion. I want to just make a very brief observation.
Don't even make it brief.
Okay.
You're worth hearing in full.
Thank you, Barry. What I call the propensity to towards catastrophism in regard to the work we're doing around 9/11.
Is there anybody who cannot hear Ralph properly?
I can do
that. You're doing pretty well, but if you stood up...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well... naturally, when we describe the realities of 9/11 and forever the authorities are promising us another catastrophic event that through the category of terror, which is the, you know, the integument of bourgeois ideology, this false consciousness about a demonic other that's going to create a terrorist assault upon us all, around which the entire justification for the wars of predation as well as repression at home are organized. This false consciousness about the category of terror. But consequently, when we talk about a 9/11 inevitably occurring again and the promise that they're going to attack our water supply and there'll be a mini nuclear attack and the other, and they prepare the same, there's a certain propensity for people to be overwhelmed and paralyzed by this. We did an 8-part series called Creating the Next Pandemic, of course, addressing the bioweaponization that the authorities are engaged in doing, and the manipulation of the genome to induce viral epidemics, emergent viruses from Ebola to Marburg to flu to SARS to hepatitis C to you name it. And of course, we know that has been done and visited upon whole populations, and notably within the United States. But in the process of disseminating this information, we're very aware of the danger we have of making people feel helpless and overwhelmed and futile. It's rather, and I think peak oil, quite frankly, a notion to which I don't subscribe, and the neo-Malthusian prospect of an inevitable exponential increase in population and only an arithmetic increase in food supply, it's rather on the order of an astronaut, an asteroid hitting the planet. You know, well, what do you do with that? And I think it's important to understand, for example, with respect to population. Look, when you have a life expectancy of 26 and 28 and you're subject to systemic disease, you need to have a number of offspring in order to sustain, to have people able to work, children able to work to keep people alive. But as soon as there's a threshold above which people are no longer in that predicament, it's inverted. Population decreases. These are phenomena that have to do with the social and economic structure. They're not written in the stars. And if we subscribe to the notion that there's this inexorable process of overpopulation, we paralyze ourselves. It's a way of avoiding addressing a system in terminal crisis and decay. Just recently, HBO did a rather interesting documentary special on global warming and the environmental crises and all of the phenomena that relate to the rise of sea levels and such. Interesting about this was their description through scientific work of how simple and easy it would be to address this putative crisis. The funds involved in projecting into space vast solar panels, which can catch the sun's rays, are sufficient to provide an energy source that will address all of the energy needs of our planet. That is not a fantasy. There's a very precise, scientifically directed project and program which the capitalist system will not and cannot undertake because there's no profit in it. Quite the contrary, it addresses the profiteering of the whole oil and capitalist structure and so on. So the point I'm trying to make about this, brothers and sisters, is that we are confronted with a system in terminal decay, no question about that. But by the same token, the huge power of these people and the resources they command and they waste and deflect are a huge opening and opportunity for us. The trillions of dollars that they steal and deflect are available to us through the productive capacity that we all have in this society and in others. We have sufficient capacity to eliminate all hunger. The trillions that are deflected, there's no reason for food not to be free, clothing not to be free, housing not to be free, schooling not to be free. We have the ability to do these things. We have to infuse our population with an awareness and a sense of what it is that can be achieved, what is available to us, the system that stands in its way, the tiny handful of people who command it, so that when we address how capitalism fouls things up, as it were, the destruction of the planet's available resources, the assault upon the population, where the population itself becomes an enemy to the system and is targeted with these bio-warfare demonic devices that they're engaged in doing, an expression of their crisis. Just very briefly, you know, Rosa Luxemburg, on the eve of World War I, in the Junius pamphlet, marvelous document and book, was citing a passage of Friedrich Engels. When Engels wrote that in the age of imperialism, when the system of capitalism is in such advanced crisis, it is compelled to wage war upon vast sectors of the population and to bring down around its ears all of culture and civilization and its maniacal quest to sustain itself, to increase profit, to maintain power. He said it is a choice between socialism and barbarism. And that choice has never been more acute, but I raise these questions to focus us around the need to build a movement for social transformation and economic change, and not to be consumed with the notion that it's futile, that we're overwhelmed, that we're on the verge of extinction, because that leads us where? To futility and to paralysis. And the message we convey to people is that, you know, it's the asteroid is about to hit the planet, and it's going to be a planet that is fragmented and all is lost. Well, what do you do with that? Where do you go with that? It's the phenomenon of the delighting pessimist, pawing over our own vomit, as it were. This is not about how smart we are, how much knowledge we can assemble to show how futile all is. That is not the road to change. I think it's essential to relate the enormous harm and damage that this system does to our population, to our species, to understand that it is a system that is incapable of meeting our needs, but is easily attackable and replaceable with a movement of the many. Again, that concentration of power is in the hands of such a small number of people, so incapable of meeting the elementary needs of everyone who lives on this planet, that no system can be expected to survive that is so clearly an opponent of the most elementary requirements of people. So we have this huge prospect, and when we open to people the idea of change, we will see an enormous movement such as has never been at our disposal before. We have a hopeful prospect. We have a huge prospect. Let's go forward with it.
Ralph, thank you so much for that. I disagree with chunks of it, and I'm so gratified that we have such brilliant people in the movement. We have so much to discuss and to share, and I thank all of you for being here and your contribution, and we'll see you around.